LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com.
All right, everybody, here we go. Let's build that energy. Reverend James, hit the music.
Welcome to Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, exploring the magical world around us, only on the LMC Radio Network. There are so many fantastic, exciting, and curious things that make up this world we share. Come join us as we explore the spiritual, magical, and wondrous phenomena that enrich our souls and bring color to our days. I'm your announcer, Reverend James of FolkConjure.com, located in Western North Carolina. This week, we welcome our special guests, Bell and Doc Murphy from the Cultural Archive of Modern Paganism, or CAMP, located in Paganistan, on preserving pagan culture. In just a moment, we'll be joined by our host, Reverend Art of FolkConjure.com in North Carolina, and our guests, Doc Murphy and Velvet. Make sure you're logged into Blog Talk Radio and join in the discussion via the chat. Now, let's catch up with our host. Reverend Art, take it away.
Thank you, Reverend James, and welcome everyone to the Monday Night Phenomena. That is Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places. That's right, it's Monday yet again. And don't forget, it's Magic Mondays on Hoodoo Psychics. Take a few moments, jump on over to the Hoodoo Psychics Facebook page, and leave a comment on the Magic Mondays post to win your chance at a free 15-minute reading with the Hoodoo Psychic of your choice. A lot of great readers out there. Definitely want to get your name in the hat. All right. So here we are yet again. So excited for tonight. This has been something that tonight's topic's been something we've been kind of talking about here and there over the course of the past year or so. It's ready. It's time. But before we jump into that, I'm going to toss it back over to Reverend James. How are things going with you, Reverend James?
Well, here upstairs, things are going quite well. some of you have been listening to the radio shows lately on the LMC Radio Network know that I have been working on a special divination deck that I've been trying to produce, and I just got my proof today, mail. It is beautiful. So I can go ahead and start to give you guys a little bit of an idea of what's going on there. And what it is it is an Appalachian-styled Lenormand deck. So we have a few new cards, and it's all tailored more toward Appalachian folklore and scenery. So if you keep a lookout on our Facebook pages and our Instagrams for Folk Conjure and Folk Faith Ministries, then you will soon see a pre-order link to start pre-orders for those, because what we want to do is we want to offer it as cheap as we can for everybody. So we need to try to get, you know, like a big group order. So the more that we can get to order, pre-order, then the cheaper we'll be able to make it for you and those initial people that are jumping on the bandwagon, so to speak. So, yeah, that's the exciting news that I have for today. How about you, Reverend Hart?
You know, Reverend James, having designed this, is very modest in just saying that these cards are beautiful. They honestly, when he sent them off for the proof and everything, you know, there's always that little bit of trepidation. It's like, are these going to come back, you know, looking fantastic or this or that? I was blown away. Personally, I'm not a Lenormand reader. However, I definitely appreciate the decks and the richness and the vibrancy in these cards. Absolutely blew me away. You know, other than that, we've been rocking and rolling, putting out some more figural candles. And honestly, I'm really, really enjoying these. Can't wait to share more with you. We literally just put in an order. We have a bunch of new styles coming. And Wednesday night this week, I'm going to put an announcement out on the Folk Conjure Facebook page. I'm going to have a live show and introduce everybody to our figural candles. We'll have some fun, you know, shoot the breeze like we do. And you get a chance to see everything that we have to offer thus far. All right. So all that aside, so thrilled for tonight's show. I've been a huge proponent of the cultural preservation efforts of this organization that is brought to us tonight. The Cultural Archive of Modern Paganism, better known as CAMP, to those of us who've been chatting about it. And what better time, too, to have our good friend Doc Murphy back on the show, bringing with her fellow co-founder of the Cultural Archive of Modern Paganism, Miss Velvet, joining us tonight. I'm going to toss it over to you, Murphy. How are things going?
Oh, things are really good. I'm telling you right now, I am a Lenormand reader, and, like, I want that deck, like, but I'm not on Facebook or Instagram, so you got to figure out a way for me to hop on and pre-order.
Oh,
I know,
absolutely.
I'm super excited about that. And I'll also put in a plug, too. I know you guys have an Etsy site now, and I have taken a look at the figural candles that you guys make and sell. They're gorgeous. So make sure that you plug that Etsy site, too, with those beautiful candles and everything.
Thank you so much.
I am okay. My big joke that I've told everybody is that with the launch of this new year, every year I do a tarot spread of the 12 months of this year, and each card is, you know, the card of the month sort of a thing. And, you know, you guys and I have been in conversation about things going on with me personally and some work that you're helping me with. And the first card of the year, the card of January, was the devil. And it occurred to me that, like, you know what, I'm not going to fight it. I am just going to be a big hunker down pain in the ass who is going to just eat cookies and be selfish for this entire month and just not worry about being productive and just be a complete brat, because it's the devil card month and I don't even care. But I do recall I was chatting with James once about saying, well, you know, it's cuffing season here in Minnesota, so it's not really a time to go out and do things or date or whatever. And I remember James was like, well, what's cuffing season? And for those that live up north, you know what that means. It's just kind of where whoever you're with, you stay with, or whoever you hook up with somebody and just stay with them through the winter because you need someone just to hang out with through the winter and to get to the holidays with, even if it's not the best thing. And then I look at the devil card. And there's two people, as you know, chained at the feet of the devil. And I'm like, well, there's your new interpretation of the devil card right there. The devil card is cuffing season. So if anyone calls up, it's like, what's my dating prospects going to be like? The devil card comes up. It's like, honey, it's cuffing season. Just don't even worry about it for at least springtime. So and it happens in Minnesota. It's like cuffing season ends, and then everybody, like, ends their relationships or breaks up with their partner, or suddenly polyamory seems like a great idea, and it just everyone blooms like flowers. So there you go. But that was my big cosmic revelation. The rest of the month has been just, you know, getting work done, staying focused on just me and me and me, and getting cookies delivered, and just not worried about being productive, because now, with all the hard work that Velvet and the rest of our board have been doing, we are so ready to pounce and launch with camp that pretty much we're hitting the ground running in February. As soon as our grant is released to us, we get to start with an oral history project. So, but I'll just go ahead here, and I will formally introduce you all and to everyone. This is my good friend and my research partner, the archivist of our project, and in a lot of ways the instigator. She only gave me the call. This is Velvet Capone, and Velvet and I are old friends in the community, but this was something that brought our brains together and our skills together that we're both passionate about. And so I'll just kind of introduce you to her and have her introduce and talk about herself a little bit. Hey, Velvet.
Hey, I was almost waiting for you to say, and my heart is open at the end of that, but that doesn't make sense to anybody else.
Velvet and I both have done Fire Circle for many years, and that's sort of an inside joke for Fire Circlers. But my heart is open, Velvet. Go for it.
Yeah, my heart is ajar. We'll stick with that. So I'm Velvet Capone. I'm the introvert of the camp group of people, and so this whole week has been me pushing myself outside of my comfort zone and learning how to make a basic website and re-engaging with social media, even though I hate it and we broke up like 2 years ago.
it's a love-hate relationship.
Yeah. Well, and I thought that this season was going to be like getting ready for me in February to like hand some work off to other people. And then out of nowhere, someone from a local paper got a hold of me and is like, I saw you're getting a grant and I'd like to write an article about you. And I'm like, okay. Oh, if you're going to do that, I better have a website. Oh, if I have a website, I better be able to take donations. Oh, if I'm going to have all this, I should put it on Facebook. Uh-oh.
She literally founded it in like a week's time because... And we're really glad because now people are reaching out and seeing it and going, holy man, this is like the real deal now. So, yeah, way to go.
I just checked the analytics, and we've had 4 people from Korea look at the website and, like, 2 people from Latvia, and that was kind of cool to me.
That is pretty neat.
And it's, you know, it's obviously just going to continue to grow. I know I've been so excited for camp. As many of our regular listeners know, and I know we'll get more into the discussion about, you know, preserving the culture in the second segment of the show. But, you know, as soon as I saw that there was a Facebook page, I blew it out to as many groups as I possibly could. I invited like 40 people to it. They'll meander their ways through. But really it's, I've already been watching it start to really take hold, and such a fantastic, fantastic organization to be able to support and really be there at the ground level and watch it grow. You both and I'm sure the rest of the board, whom we have yet to meet, hint.
Okay.
You've done a wonderful job putting this together so far, and I can only see it growing well beyond what y'all initially expected.
Well, thank you. Well, thanks also for shoving it around to all your friends and other groups on Facebook. That's wonderful, and we really, really appreciate that. Yeah, a lot of the groundwork of becoming a 501c3, a lot of it was, I'll just sing her praises here. Velvet really busted her ass while I was having eye surgery last year. We actually had been working kind of in tandem with another nonprofit, a pagan org here in the Twin Cities, and they were the ones that were applying for the grant and hired us to do the work, and we were kind of working that way. And that situation just kind of didn't end up working out for a whole lot of reasons. And so Velvet just said, nope, we just need to be our own 501c3. And right about that time, I think you guys remember, I was going blind. And so she just said, you get your surgery and you heal, and we'll do this work. And so after I had my surgery, we went to PaganaCon. We'll talk a little bit about us presenting at PaganaCon in the next segment too. And we were standing in the room and just said, well, we're going to become a 501c3 of our own. We're doing some fundraising to do that. And within a very short amount of time, some very generous private donors said, here, we'll help get the fees taken care of. And we were able to incorporate and then become a 501c3 in like record time. And we have a great board of really dedicated, serious people. But like I said, I kind of went to sleep for 4 weeks, came back with better eyes, and we were a 501c3 because, you know, like I said, this is kind of Velvet's universe of the nonprofit world. And we can talk about getting that project started too.
Yeah, I have some brags on with our timeline there.
Y'all blew that ish out of the water. No kidding. I've, you know, in my my other side, you know, a lot of people know that I do business coaching, small business coaching, things like that, working with entrepreneurs and such. And I've helped people to formulate 501c3s. And y'all did it in absolute record time. like hats off to you. It's not an easy process in large part for those that don't know. Like, how many hoops can we possibly have you jump through?
So then you might know just how impressive this is. Things kind of came to their conclusion with the other nonprofit December of 2022. In anticipation of PaganaCon last year, we incorporated like the first week of March and got that determination very quickly, put together our bylaws, elected a board, put in our 501c3 application, and had it halfway through June show up in the mail. So
that's
just
awesome.
Over 3 months.
Yeah.
You know, and really, you know, in a lot of ways, it's the universe conspiring to come together and say, this is needed. This is worthwhile. This is something that will benefit everyone. I mean, you have, you know, just about everything else is systematically categorized and organized and examined and so on and so forth. But outside of, you know, a handful of notable, I'll say, authors who have been prolific in the genre, a lot gets lost in the pagan community.
Mhm. It's not so much that they're lost. It's they're in their basements. They're hoarding stuff in their basements and their garages, and somehow this community kind of knew that this was stuff worth preserving or saving or having on hand. even if it's just sort of intuition telling him that. Like I said, as we, as we talk a little bit more about this, Velvet has made some visits, some preliminary visits to some of the homes of people that have stuff, specifically the documents and the material culture that is Velvet's purview. And people, I did a dissertation on this community, and I thought my access to the community was pretty impressive, i.e. my committee really thought it was impressive. I was scratching the surface. People are emptying their closets and emptying their garages and basements and are ready now that there's a project like this to share and to allow us to preserve it. They know it's going to be preserved now, so get let into the basements, and it's really exciting.
You know, before we jump into the main topic, we already mentioned it a couple times here, but I really want to share a little bit of light on, in this first segment, on the upcoming Paganicon, which is something else that I'm very excited for. Reverend James and I hopefully will be able to be in attendance this year.
We're going to show you such a good time if you show up.
I will bring my Tums.
And a water bottle.
Yep. And a drum.
Stay hydrated.
Mm-hmm.
And a drum. So apparently, I have a whole shopping list already. So fill everybody in a little bit more on Paganicon and what can be expected.
Velvet, you want to take this one, or you want me to jump in?
I was going to reply to a thing in the chat, so you have to take over that, and I'll talk about Paganicon.
Okay.
So Paganicon is an event put on by Twin Cities Pagan Pride. So, of course, when you want details, I can't remember how many years they've been going on. It's over 10, and I've been to all of them. So I should know how so many, but I don't. So it's kind of expanding on their out in the public Pagan Pride event that happens every fall out in the public community. And, you know, so people walk through this public park and go, what are those weirdos doing? And they can kind of encounter us. So this is – that got really big, and they tried making it be like a multiple-day thing, and that just kind of turned into a – several day long convention in the winter when there is nothing to do outside because it's Minnesota. And so we've got all the vendors, we've got all the presenters, we have bands come in, and there's like a themed ball, and we've got party suites, and we just kind of hang out and talk about all our crazy stuff for a weekend. And this is my first year in a very long time that I get to go, and I am not involved in running anything. So I might actually get to go to a workshop.
Are you bending?
No, not this year. They try to, like, give everybody an opportunity to get in there, so you rarely will get in 2 years in a row. So fingers crossed for next year.
All righty, but you'll get to have some fun. That's cool. Yeah, I'm just plugging a little bit. Velvet also makes really outstanding handmade jewelry. So there you go. But,
cool.
Yeah. Paganicon is part con, in the think Star Trek con, think KISS con, think all these things, where people of a like community get together. And it's also a conference, as in a place for people to present and to teach. And it's definitely geared more toward, graduate level, I guess, involvement in the community. It's not, Pagan Pride Day is usually reserved for introduction to the public. Who are we? What are we about? What are some basics? Whereas Paganicon is for us, and that's where we get into the meatier, juicier techniques, topics. There's usually always ministerial credentialing and ministering legal matters segment. We get guest speakers and notaries, authors. And this year, camp is going to be presenting. We're already scheduled for Friday at 1 p.m. And we're going to have a lot to share, including a little bit of research that this semester that Velvet was able to do about an instance in the community. And it's going to be a really good opportunity to demonstrate to people, okay, so when you say you're using an archive for research, what does that mean? And we're going to kind of break down how she used the archival materials and historical materials and oral histories we've been collecting to do research. So it'll be a nice way to kind of like step one, we did this. But it's also a really good time. This is also a time where, you know, people that we haven't seen the entire year that come up from around the country can come and just be pagan community. And, you know, it's a lot of joy. It can be a lot of silly. It can be very educational, but it's, you know, it's also a little bit of a, you know, pagan vacation in a hotel too. So it's a really great event they put on every year. The hotel itself is sold out, but registration, if you want to go for the day or for the entire weekend, is open, and you can register at
the
door.
They do have an overflow hotel.
Oh, they do? Okay.
They have an overflow hotel. You can still come and stay.
Got to tell Art and James about this then. So, yes, you can still come and stay. I got some people to let them know. I didn't know about that. That's cool. But, so it's indoors.
I've been looking at the schedule. And I don't think we've even mentioned the dates yet. It's Friday, March 15th, Saturday, March 16th, and Sunday, March 17th. And this is one damn jam-packed schedule. Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if anybody's listening and seriously wanting to attend, just check this out. I mean, spiritual rhythm dance, how to open your Akashic records, psychic protection, paganism and mental health, teaching witchcraft, intro to energy work and psychic defense, meditations for the tarot, a new method for working with entities and spirits, basic astrology, offering and sacrifice in modern paganism,
mm-hmm.
ritual leadership skills, deep green witchcraft, Jin magic without tears. That intrigues me.
me too.
Turbocharged crying. Living in
good
the change from the age of Pisces to Aquarius. You know, that's only a handful. There's like 15 things going on every hour to 45 minutes all weekend long.
Well, and this makes a difference to anyone, my son has been going since he was 11. And other than I would make him go to bed when it was adult time in like the party suites, it was a safe place for him to go and explore workshops. Because there are some that are accessible to teenagers. And I know that Pagan Pride really encourages teenagers and younger adults to get in. Like, they even have a discount rate for them. And so, you know, he's an adult now and can go, he can do whatever he wants. But, like, it isn't just for experienced people. It isn't just, you know, you don't have to come with a big knowledge base to be able to understand what's going on and get something out of it.
Mm-hmm. And it's community too. You know, there's some people mm-hmm. that go and never attend a single workshop. They just hang out in the suites and enjoy each other and catch up and have a good time too. So there's that too.
I really can't get over the scheduling. It's been something. I keep going back and looking, and it's like I find something new and I read a little bit further in. And it just absolutely.
Well, I'll plug one too, along with our camp presentation on Friday. I'm on the board of the Hay River Fire Haven Pagan Church. This is the church that sponsors the fire circles that Velvet and I have attended, and we're going to be doing one on the portal of service and what service means in a pagan community context and for spiritual practice. So that was on Sunday afternoon. After everyone has had breakfast. and so you can bring your breakfast to our to our presentation. But I'll plug that one too. Is that that's one that Doc Murphy and some of our other camp board members are affiliated with, and will be presentation interactivity on that.
I have to close the website because I it will take me down. I can't tell you how many times I've gone to the Pianicon site and just it's been like a rabbit hole and just building so much excitement for myself. You know, it really is. It's a destination con. It really is. So really glad to be able to share some time, you know, really to discuss it and share this outside of the Tri-Cities area or the Twin Cities area. You know, we're going to make Paganistan known around the world.
Yay!
And I got to tell you, Doc Murphy, I finally got my Prodea cookbook.
Did you? Oh, if you bring it, we'll find Stephen and Prodea. Oh, yeah. It's been in publication for years. When I used to work at the I, it
Why
was
didn't
on the
no
show.
One tell me that?
Where have you been? Anyway. Well, anyway.
Cool.
you've been raising a kid.
I think this is
that's
perfect the... place. We're going to let's take a moment. We're going to have some messages cool. from our sponsors, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to jump into preserving pagan culture.
All I was going to say, Art, before you do it, was that bring your book because Prodea will probably likely be at Paganicon. They'll sign your book for you.
Very nice.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman, Sundays 3 to 4:30. Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays 4 to 5:30. The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, in syndication, Tuesdays. The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Miss Phoenix LeFay, in syndication, Tuesdays. The Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield, in syndication, Wednesdays. And The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Deborah Voigt, Thursdays, 4 to 5, all times specific, at 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
Some quick announcements about those upcoming shows on the LMC Radio Network. Tuesday, January 30th on the Crystal Silence League and Syndication will be the topic of The Astral Tower Part 2. And Tuesday, January 30th on The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron in Syndication with Miss Elvira and Phoenix LeFay will be the topic of The Goddess Fortuna. And Wednesday, January 31st on The Now You Know Show in Syndication with Professor Porterfield will be the topic of Psalms to Quell Your Enemies Part 2 and Sulfur. And Thursday, February 1st at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Miss Elvira and Deb Voigt will be the special seasonal rebroadcast of In Bulk. And next Sunday, February 4th at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman will be Lukianos providing an Oracle Hour topic on Obi. Thank you to all of our sponsors. Back to you, Reverend Art. Oh, I did miss a bit of that. Hang on just a second. Wait. Hang on. Support for this program is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com, and by the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic conjure practitioners located online at readersandrootworkers.org, and by Hoodoo Psychics. The first psychic line run entirely by Hoodoo practitioners. Receive a reading with a trusted root worker instantly. Call 1-888-4-HOODOO or visit hoodoopsychics.com. And by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of the Association of Independent Spiritual Churches located online at crystalsilenceleague.org. There we go.
I'm kind of stumbling now because I was trying so hard not to laugh. Thank you, Reverend James. That was fantastic. And for those of you that don't know, he does do that all in one breath. So anyway, on with the show. You know,
yes.
Camp has been such a labor of love for the two of you and the rest of the board. And I want to say, because Reverend James and I very much so have a deep-seated interest in preserving culture, preserving the historical, anthropological aspects of, you know, the magical world, whether that is, you know, from a hoodoo standpoint and a conjurer standpoint, Southern Appalachia, you know, so on and so forth. We actually did a show not too long back. I want to say it was in September, you know, really talking about preserving folk culture. So camp is something that's near and dear to my heart. And I'm just going to say that it's a very important endeavor. You know, you have your theologians who have exhaustively torn apart and reconstructed the various versions of the Bible. You know, you have your individuals that have delved into all of these other areas, but this is one of the first times I've seen somebody get a group coming together specifically for pagan culture. And I can't emphasize how important this project is. I'll let you take it away.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you so much, and thanks for your unwavering support. Well, I guess I could kind of tell the origin story of camp a little bit. Folks know that, you know, my gig for the longest time was, you know, that I was an academic. My dissertation in cultural anthropology was on Paganistan. My book is called, and it's on the pagan community here in the Twin Cities. You know, in the course of just slogging it through academia as an adjunct and just kind of, you know, every time I kind of would think in terms of new research, just something just would start up and then it wouldn't click, or, you know, there'd be publications here and there. I did some book publishing with my late advisor, but it kind of wasn't really finding the teeth. And Velvet texted me out of the blue back in 2019 and said, have you thought about collecting the oral histories and interviewing folks in the community to preserve them? And I went, I think about it all the time. I just don't know how to get started. And she said, oh, I know how to get started. I need somebody who can write about paganism. And I'm like, is the Pope Catholic? So it was a few meetings where, you know, Velvet's got a long history, which she can explain to you kind of in the nonprofit world and in relationship with the Minnesota Historical Society. So she, with regard to how they do stuff, she's got a long experience with them. And, you know, I'm the blowhard academic who can write about why things are important. And we sat, and when she said, this is how we can do it, and this is how we can start it, and this is how we can preserve it, I'm like, well, okay, well, then let's do it. And in the course of applying for grants, Minnesota Historical Society has been liking what we presented, has been giving us grant money, first as a with the original nonprofit we were working with before, and now as our own 501c3, they seem to believe, they're shown to believe that what we're doing is worthy of funding, grant funding. And it's been, I know I'll speak personally, for me, it's been just, you know, it's been my heart, because this was what I came to the Twin Cities to do, and now I'm back in the field and can do it again. My focus was, you know, a lot of the folks who are elders in our community, when I first came to the community here to do research, were the age that I am now. And now our elders are eldering. And I was very much concerned that there was not just written material, but the stuff that's ephemeral, the memories, the stories, the sensuous details, the anthropological details that were going to be lost if they weren't preserved. I was really genuinely concerned that, you know, all these decades of of work and cultural construction were going to disappear, and we were going to be left with paganism on TikTok or your that way. And thankfully, that is, I've been proven completely wrong on that, and we'll get into that too. But so Velvet and I, when we work together, are kind of like a complete brain. You know, she's got kind of the sequential, structural kind of the planning. She's got the budget stuff down, and I'm, you know, the people person who goes out and does the interviews. But I'll have her tell her half of the origin story too, but that's where it was for me.
Oh, me, tell a story. Okay. So I know most of, like, all this background technical stuff with nonprofits because building a nonprofit is what my parents did my entire childhood. It was, like, their third child, and it was the favorite child. So, you know, I knew about board dynamics and stuff by, like, 10. And when your parents start a nonprofit, you're their first voluntold slave thing. I folded a lot of brochures for them for like a couple bucks. And so I first met Murphy back in 2008, 2010, when she was doing her thesis. And in my former life, I thought I was going to be a fashion designer, and that's what I was in school for. And when I got out of school, I realized that was a very ridiculous idea, and I would never, that's stressful, I'm not going to do that. And so in 2013, I accidentally fell into archiving. And I've been archiving, like, the organization that my parents started and my dad's history as a professional artist and an arts educator. And so through all of that, I've learned how to fund those projects. I've learned how to plan and organize them. I became very familiar with how the Minnesota Historical Society works. And then in summer of 2019, I was finishing up a certification program through the Society of American Archivists, which I highly recommend, right before heading to Fire Circle. And so, like, it was swirling around in my head, and I'm like, hey, Murphy, didn't we talk about doing something, like, in the middle of Fire Circle one year, but our brains weren't there?
Because our brains
were
on fire,
should talk
but
about
yeah.
That more. Well, yeah. So it's good that I remembered that we had that conversation at all. And then we just had a quick little chat about it at Fire Circle while we were doing all of our other Fire Circle-ness things. And I honestly think that the way that things have fallen into place since then has to be that it germinated at Fire Circle. And we talk about it there. We, you know, board members have come from there, and so we just kind of threw all of this transformation magic at it, and then things happened, like the dominoes fell. It just happened like 3 or 4 years earlier than I wanted it to, because I wanted to get through grad school first. And so instead of doing
that, I've already been through grad school. We could do it now.
Yeah, but I have to actually finally finish a bachelor's degree. So this happened like my second semester back in school while I'm running another archive, and I'm like, well, I guess we're doing this. I just don't need to sleep. But we've with this current grant project that I'm working on, like, I'm finally going to have something to show for all the back end stuff that I've been doing, because up until now it's just been like, well, we're making plans to make a plan. Now, we took those plans and we're making some policies. I can't tell you what they say till we're done, because I don't know. And so within the next few months, I'm going to be able to put out, like, if you want to donate digital stuff you have, send it to me in this format. If you want us to digitize something, like, this is how long that takes, and this is when we have time for it. You want to start a project with us? Here's all those details. And so that's really exciting for me, because other than the oral histories, we haven't done anything that people outside of the field understand in the slightest.
You know, a lot of what you've shared so far has been, you know, this, it's very good to kind of be able to share these bare bones aspects of building this program, mm-hmm. this project from nothing. And it just goes to show, you know, by example that when something meaningful is meant to be, the right things will come, the right people will come together, the right opportunities will present to really kind of bring it to fruition. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's kind of a very unique kind of blending, it sounds like, y'all initially had. But a chance encounter can really bring around big things. And a lot of people kind of discount these sorts of occurrences in their lives. You know, they'll have some offhanded coffee shop conversation with somebody and say, oh, maybe we should do this, maybe we should do that. And they leave it at that. And, you know, maybe a few months later, even a few years later, they'll think back and say, hey, you know, that was actually a pretty damn good idea. I wonder if so-and-so, they're not going to remember, blah, blah, blah. And it dies. I think of these things. I've seen them. I've unfortunately had a few of those moments myself. You know, and you wonder what could have grown from them. And mm-hmm. the two of you joining us tonight and, you know, the rest of the board that's come together to build this is giving that example to everyone of what can come when, you know, a like-minded group comes together and really, you know, pulls everybody pulling their own weight and jumping in and attacking this project. It really is a wonderful thing. Nagashima, cosmic destiny, karmic convergence.
Synchronicity, manifest little they guard. We got magic behind
yes.
us. I'm agree with Velvet 100%.
Oh, absolutely.
Here.
Well, yep. And I think when you're doing a project where there's really no ego in this, like if you go on the website and you look at our mission statement and you talk to anybody involved, none of it is, well, I want to do this because it's fun for me. Okay, I am doing this because it's fun for me, but that's like a side benefit.
It is fun for us.
It's all about like other people and who can have access to this later. And, you know, what did this person do? That's interesting because there's so many nonprofits everywhere, let alone within – you know, just our local community that like cult of personality will bring some, you know, they'll have the charisma, something will get started and then other egos will join in. And we've had organizations blow up as much as we've had covens blow up and it just like nothing comes from it. But when you're doing something for the public benefit and it's not about you as a person, it's a lot easier to get other people to invest their time, invest their energy, and, like, garner support because it's all out in the open. The cards are on the table, and you can see what we're doing.
You know, you
oh,
made
oh, there's
a huge
my mission
point.
Statement.
You made a very
yep.
huge point, though, to approach without ego. You know, I look at the team on the website, and you know it's such an eclectic group, but you can just you get that sense that y'all are driven to build this for the world. It's not just for Paganistan. It's not just for the Twin Cities. It will continue to grow and encompass so much of, hopefully, as much of as possible, you know, pagan cultures, different regional areas, you know, and but to do that without ego. This is not here to, it's not a pedestal that is being built. It's not a, you know, we're not enshrining the team where, you know, the team is there to serve. And that's huge because I've seen it. I've been a myself. You mentioned covens exploding because of ego. Been there, done that. Spiritualist churches that I've seen, you know, rot from the inside because of the ego. And ego can't be a part of things like this. Huge point. And so glad you brought that up.
Though I would like to give huge kudos to our board members because every single one of them, I think, joined on because I went, I need you, pretty, pretty, please. And they went, okay, just tell me what we're doing because I have no idea and I'll do it. Like, this is awesome. I don't know what you need, but if you can put it in written form and I can look at it, like, okay, cool, I'll do that. And they have been so much more supportive than I could have even thought to ask for. And none of this would have been possible without being able to get a group together quickly that was focused and just willing to make things happen.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we have a board of remarkable, dedicated people who, same thing. They're just seeing past any of their own aggrandizement or anything that their group or their own organizations, and they're like, this is important, and we want to support what you guys are doing. And we can see the larger picture. I mean, your point is correct, Art, in that, yeah, we're situated right now and starting out in Minnesota because this is where we are, but the scope of this has always been national. And so eventually the hope is that once we get the structure in place for the archive and also more of the methods and more collections of oral histories done, that we'll be able to help other communities in other parts of the country start local projects that will eventually end up in the archive. So we're starting in Minnesota because this is where we are, but we are definitely thinking in terms of national scope.
Well, and being in Minnesota is part of why we've been able to be successful, because something unique here is we have the Legacy Amendment Fund that funds the arts and the humanities, and it's like it's state money as opposed to having to compete with everyone else to get national level money. And so we've been able to get funded to do all of this startup organizational foundational documentation, trial run with the oral histories because of the state support for preserving history, that if we were in another state, you know, we probably would take 10 years to get to this point. But because we're here, we're able to get all of that taken care of and have the structure in place to expand beyond this state. And it helps that we have a large community here to be documenting to justify them continuing to be very supportive of us.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Definitely.
You know, there was a question that Dr. Sweets had asked in the chat earlier, and I know, Doc Murphy, you answered it in the chat. But I think, you know, for those that are out there listening, too, that it's important that you vocalize this a little bit. But Dr. Sweets had asked, would you say hoodoo and the hoodoo-like practices of the South fall into this pagan category, since hoodoo has strong ties to Christianity, yet it's not a religion? And that I want to take that and expand a little bit more on that question as to when we're talking about preserving pagan culture, what avenues are we exploring? Are we looking at the Druid rites? Are we looking at Wicca? Are we looking at hoodoo? I'll leave that. I think you know where I'm going with that.
Sure. Yeah. I can take that one. With regard to who are we looking at, anybody who kind of falls under that umbrella. What I tell people is that paganism or modern paganism is sort of an umbrella or a big tent, and then all these other kind of community groups and traditions and tribes are unique under that tent. Or what I say is that, like, you know, each of these communities, like the Druids and Wicca and heathenry and all these other expressions of paganism are all like stars, but the community is like a constellation. You know, each star has its own, you know, brilliance and its meaning, but when you step back and see the constellation of the community, that in and of itself forms itself into a new meaningful structure. So, yeah, we are going to be interviewing, for example, the first round of oral history interviews were with folks that were elders in the community. A lot of it was we picked folks for that round on their age and their experience long in the community, regardless of what their tradition was. Actually, we wanted kind of a spread and then to get names from them about where to continue. So we had Blue Star Wiccans, we had Garnarians, we had Druid folks, we had a couple of heathens, we had independent folks, we had teachers, they were all over the place, but basically they were all kind of long-influenced people. This round of oral histories, we're specifically going to work with the Wiccan Church of Minnesota, which has been a 501c3 pagan church since 1988, and was one of the most influential forces as an organization for several decades in the Twin Cities. They got a long history, and we're going to be looking at that. But then we're looking, you know, the American Druidry, as we know it, started in Minnesota at Carleton College in Northfield, Minnesota. You can actually read about this in Margo Adler's book, Drawing Down the Moon. Started out as sort of a campus protest group at Carleton College, but then after it became a fun group and they all graduated and went to grad school, a guy named Isaac Bonowitz roomed with one of the old graduates and saw that Druidry was just what he was looking for, came back to Minnesota and started Druid orders here in Minnesota. There's just a lot of really interesting angles. So there's going to be, community-wise, there's going to be a whole lot of subgroups that we're going to be able to tackle, and also different ways that they break themselves up. With regard to hoodoo, what I said in the chat is that hoodoo is a magical technology. It's a praxis. It's a way of doing magic. And you don't have to be any particular religion yourself in order to practice hoodoo. Now, the culture bearers of hoodoo magic have been the African-American Christian community, but it's a method. It's a way of doing things, and as long as you are true to the method and true to the cultural integrity of that magical tradition, i.e., you gotta open the Bible, you gotta know your doctrine of signatures, you gotta know your herbs and what they mean, etc. You can be any religion you wish and practice hoodoo. And I just was adding that there are a lot of pagans who are practicing hoodoo these days, because anyway, the time has come in the community. People want a really authentic American historical magic. We have a lot more pagans of color making their presence known. I know in Paganistan for sure, but I think in other parts of the country. And this is the magic of their family. This is the magic of their history. And we also have a hell of a lot of pagans who are fans of blues music. And so that avenue opens up as well. So in a sense, I mean, in a lot of ways, it could be, you know, all these little kind of angles are separate projects that you can apply to get a legacy grant for. So there could be a place where, okay, who in the pagan community is a hoodoo practitioner, and what does that mean, and how does that work? There could be other praxis-based projects as well, styles of magic, ceremonial magic, magicians in town. So hoodoo, if there are pagan hoodoo practitioners, and there are quite a few graduates of Miss Cat's course here in Paganistan, there could be a project there. But to remind folks that hoodoo is a practice, a magical technology. It's not a religion. And to keep that in mind as well, that of course it could end up under the umbrella of paganism if we get enough folks who want to share their story.
So I've got a little something to throw in there. So our name, starting with Cultural Archive, does make for a nice acronym, but it was also very intentionally chosen because with all of these different ways that people define themselves, label themselves, live their lives, do their spiritual practices, a subculture of an amalgamation of all of them has been created. And so there's lots of books on every kind of tradition that you can think of, but what isn't out there is anything on how these people live their lives, how this subculture that we have created together works, what it looks like, how is it different from the way Christians live, or how is it different from Jews, how is it different from Buddhists, even though there's a lot of Buddhist pagans. So, it,
well,
you know, we're not
too.
A lot, especially Prodea. So we're not just wanting to look at people because of what their spiritual practice is, but also their engagement in this community. And mm-hmm. because, like, I put something along these lines on the website, and this has become an even firmer belief of mine as I've been studying history in school, is that without understanding your history, it's really hard to have an idea of what the future looks like, let alone to envision, like, growth or positive outcomes, to see ourselves going somewhere if we don't know where we came from. And there's few credible sources on our community and on our history, and there's not much access because a lot of this stuff is in people's heads, in people's basements. And so pretty much anybody can go online and say whatever they want, and it seems just as true and valid as something that's the complete opposite. And, you know, whose guess is as good as anybody else's guess? So mm-hmm. through doing this work, we're finding the stories of real people, not, you know, generalizations about people of a certain decade in a certain location that kind of sort of were doing stuff like this and wearing clothes. You know, it's making it about human beings instead of concepts.
Exactly. I mean, when we do the oral histories, you know, we get kind of basic information, biographical information. How did you come to Minnesota? How did you come to this community? But then we let them talk about what's important to them. And these are the stories that I crave, you know, as an anthropologist. You are a person in this community. What's been meaningful? How have you lived your life? What are some of the sensory memories that you have? What are some of the details that don't get recorded in written documents? A little quick story share. There was back in the 90s, there was an ethnography that was done by Jonas Solomonsen. She was a Norwegian anthropologist, and she came to California to study the reclaiming community. And she was initially trained as a theologian and kind of hung out with the pagans of California, and kind of out of habit stuck with textual sources, books, written materials about paganism to try to get an idea of what theologically what their paganism was about and reclaiming paganism was about. And when she presented her findings initially to the community, they all just kind of dropped and said, this isn't what we're about at all. You got us completely wrong. And she realized after talking with the community, it was because she stuck to the books 100% and didn't talk to them about their cultural experiences. So she went back to Norway, got ethnographic anthropological training, and then came back and did it again. We're trying to make sure that the historical record and the written documentation and the cultural objects, as well as the memories, the oral histories, the details, the personal stories are woven together in the course of creating this cultural archive. We want to just make sure that, again, we don't want to make the pagans of Paganistan into superheroes, but we also are not going to, you know, condemn them. It's about these are people who just happen to have this their own reasons for identifying with this community, their own ways of being, their own practices. We have a lot of magical innovation in Paganistan. And to just have them tell their story. In our last very lightning fast effective board meeting for camp, our president actually asked a really important question, and because he wanted to know about our methods. And he said, so when you collect all these oral histories, is the point to get as many stories as possible and then search those stories for the real story? And that's where I was like, I'm so glad you asked that question, because I think a lot of people think that. No, what we're doing is we're interviewing people to get as many very details as possible. Everybody's individual history is their history. And the point is not to interrogate them to find out, you know, truth is. If you want to know the date of something that happened, you can go consult a newspaper or a written document or a newsletter.
Right.
But we want to get those details that the documents don't collect. A lot of the questions I asked are sensory, for example. You know, if you were, one of the questions I ask in the oral histories is, 100 years from now, if someone digs up your archive, your interview here on our website, and they want to know what attending a ritual, a pagan ritual, was like in 1982, can you describe what they'd walk into? And that's a fun question to ask, because it kind of, you know, you're not on the spot talking about who you think you are and what you think you're about. It's just memories. And that opens the world up. And that's what intrigues me as well, to have archived
and
have preserved in addition to the documentation.
Well, and the fact that we're following up. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Okay. The fact that we're following up from the archival, the historian's point of view, with the same people that we are doing the interviews with, we also get to see what are the things that they hung on to. So you're getting their story from their perception, but then they're also telling another story about what is meaningful to them by this is what I kept. So it's not just a description of something that they were involved in, but here is the picture that represents it that was meaningful to me.
Yes.
So you're continuing to see like all of these facts and little pieces coming together, and that's what tells a big story. Okay, that was
indeed.
You know, I think one of the unique things that is really phenomenal about this project as well and this organization is that ability to capture these oral histories from the people that have lived through these, you know, various events over the course of time. You know, true, you can get facts and figures and all that kind of ish from newspapers, magazines, or what have you, regarding any particular event, but to understand it from multiple perspectives of people who lived it and weren't just paid to report it is it's kind of priceless in many, many ways. That just being able to be immersed in those details from multiple angles, you really can't put a price on that.
I agree 100%.
Oh, there was one story from our first set that of oral history interviews. So, of course, I can't remember who said it and who they were talking about. But there was at least three people that talked about the same ritual that happened in a field, and the people leading it timed their drawing and their energy raising with exactly when they knew a train was going to pass by. And so we got three different versions with different levels of knowledge of what was going on, describing their experience of that. And I did the transcription for those interviews, and I'm hearing them while typing them. I'm like, that is so cool. Can I do that? Where are the trains?
Yeah, event was the PLSS. I'm laughing because I've heard the story so many times from the elders, and it is really funny that the folks that were starting to cast the circle and they timed the evocation of the element of earth, you know, welcome the direction of earth to our ritual. And right as they were doing that, a train rolled by and the ground rumbled beneath them, and they timed it before they even. So people were like, whoa! But I've seen it happen, too, in less timed situations, too. I mean, you know, being at a festival where the priestess goes into the east, and as she evokes air to come to the circle, literally the wind comes up, you know. That's not the sort of thing that people are interested in. Yeah, reporters are interested in paying attention to. You know, they have a different mandate. It's an important mandate, but it's a different mandate. As you're saying, being able to get all these different, or the bare ass beach story. We have a couple of different versions of the bare butt beach story, which is Payanistan's earliest coven, earliest church, they would do outdoor rituals in the park, usually after dark. And they chose the option. Some would be sky clad and some would wear their robes. And it was just whatever you feel like doing. It was kind of a little bit wacky, if considered back in those days. Well, they decided they were along the bank of the Minnehaha Creek, of Mississippi River, and as they were all standing in circle, I remember Lady Aura, the priestess of that ritual, saying, "I don't know how it happened that everybody that was skyclad ended up with their backs to the river, but right about the time we're doing the ritual, there's a boat that's coming by, and of course they got the light going back and forth, kind of sweeping the shore, and it sweeps across this coven having their ritual, and all the bare butts are facing out into the river." She said, "You literally saw like the light sweep and then whoop, come back and kind of land." She said, "And the boat almost hit the bridge because of what they saw." And so she told that story. Somebody else told that story. And that's just one of those, like, you know, it could have been the stuff of legend, but now we have stories and some documentation of, you know, this is the stuff that creates cultural memories and cultural history, as well as the dates and times and all sorts of things. So, like, yeah, I mean, this gives me life.
And that kind of relates to another subject that you talk about a lot. Because, like, Murphy talks a lot about intergenerational issues within the pagan community. So I, you know, I'm an older millennial, and I joined the community in my 20s. And so all of these boomers that, like, started things were well-established. They were learned. They'd been doing things for decades. And I'm like, I am intimidated by you. But I've stuck around long enough that, like, now I realize they're actual human beings. But I've heard from people my age and younger that, like, there's a disconnect and they don't feel like they can approach these people. But then you hear stories about them, like, mooning people passing on the river, or, you know, just doing these crazy things when they were younger. And it's like, oh, so you did do the things that I want to do. You just don't do them now. Aha. And so, like, the boomers aren't so okay boomer anymore. You know, they just don't want to show you their butt. Well, some of them do.
Some of them still do, yeah. And with regard to intergenerational stuff too, I mean, it's important that this project be, it's going to be a digital archive, that this seems to be that's the way that access is going to be the most equitable. And yeah, again, in my initial worry of, oh, we're going to lose all this great cultural history because everything's on social media, and do they even care, because they just want to, you know, we were at a festival together, Velvet and I, and there was a silent auction that was going on. People were, you know, bidding on jewelry and all sorts of wonderful hand-knitted things. And one of our elders donated a stack of old paper pagan rags, so the kind that you staple together on your kitchen table that were sent in the mail. But really, she had a collection of them, and she said, "Oh, you know, I'll make a little bit of money for the fest. I'll put some of my old stuff out here." And I thought, okay, well, we'll see. And watching the millennials and the Gen Zs, like, get into fist fights literally to get their hands on the stuff was like, okay, wait a minute, I misjudged completely. And I turned to a friend of mine who was also a millennial. He and I do a podcast together, and I said, I just been so heartening to see this. If anything, it's more impetus for us to get this culture, this digital archive going. And he turned to me and he said, "That's our generation. You give us a link and we'll click on it. We want this stuff. We just don't know how to get it because it's in everybody's basements. Give us a link and we'll click on it and we'll read it." And I'm like, all right. And that was the push to really, like, you know, we got something here that everybody wants.
And we're almost about to have those links to click. That's the real
point.
That's so exciting. And so I do have a few questions, and we're running close to that to time for today. So I want to make sure that we get some of this in. What kind of support, if someone is interested in supporting camp, what kind of support is needed? What kind of support are you looking for?
So I have a really, really boring answer to that, and it is the most mundane thing on earth. We need money. and so I'm putting the link to our donation page in the chat, and I actually, just before this, uploaded a downloadable form of our annual report that lays out everything that we're working on and what we want to build in the next year and how much that's going to cost. Because the project I'm really excited about wanting to put together is Community Digitization Days, and that's where we just kind of put out the call that we're putting on an event. We show up with a bunch of scanners, and we see what people bring us. And, you know, we've got the scanner, we've got either a phone or a camera. We can talk to the person about what they brought in and record it while we're digitizing it. So we've got an artifact, we've got a story, we've got all of this information all in one place. And it's defined by what the community is valuing. Now, you know, from the beginning, Murphy has been telling people, like, oh, well, we want to know about this, but, you know, we don't want to look at your diary. We don't want your recipes. And every time I'm like, I would like your recipes, which is why I got really excited, because I've been trying to get the Perdea cookbook from a friend of mine that's in the coven, and she keeps forgetting. But I was still a baby pagan when they published it, so I didn't know about it. But I want everybody else's Sabbath recipes, too. And because I'm in charge, there will be a community recipe digitizing day. And I want people to come in with their pictures and their recipes and tell me what it tastes like. And then I'll put them together in some way and we'll end up on the internet. But to do that, I need to get portable scanners. I need portable hard drives. I need this. I need that. So, the easiest thing is if you throw some money at me, I will do some cool stuff for you. And part of that will then be figuring out, like, okay, how can I interact with your community? Or, you know, what does this group think should be saved about them now that I have this equipment and this infrastructure to go to you or have you send things to me? Like, how can we work together?
Mm-hmm. I mean, there are things in camp.
I did add a link into the chat for you. A second,
I saw that.
Fantastic cookbook, Voodoo Food.
It's already open on
my
screen.
Favorite.
Yeah, I'm
it's
looking
a classic. Right now. It's a classic. To add to that, there are parts of camp's work that are fundable by grants, and there are parts of camp's work that are not, you know, grant funded. And
right.
So, you know, there's always going to be the needs for fundraising. Again, like I said, for the digitization days that Velvet is planning, but also for consultancies too. You know, our services are available if somebody in Wisconsin or California or North Carolina wants somebody to come out and train oral historians on how to interview, you know, or how to, or an oral historian method so they can start doing interviews in their community in a more, you know, scholarly professional way. Or if you are thinking digitizing days and want to know how to do that, you know, Velvet is available for consultancy. So those are
and
ways
there is a page on the website about all that.
These really are fantastic options, and I'm thrilled that we're having a moment to be able to share that out, because, you know, here in our neck of the woods in Western North Carolina, we have like the John C. Campbell Folk School that works to preserve, you know, folk traditions, folk herbalism and basket weaving and this all kinds
That's
of
really
stuff
cool.
that goes on there all
I'm
year
so
long.
I'm so excited.
Well,
and
like...
I happen to know where y'all can stay if you're ever in the area.
Sweet, road trip.
Well, you know, and if they want to partner on a project... I can, when you have multiple groups from different demographics and different areas, that opens up a whole world of funding, and that's where my brain automatically goes to. So if there are people out there that want to work with us or want to do their own thing and have never gone into the world of grant applications, Like, that's the work that is really hard and you never get paid for because you're doing work to find money to pay yourself. But I'm good enough to at least have a conversation about it and see what we can put together, because it's just, you know, an unavoidable reality of doing things costs money, and overcoming those hurdles is a group effort.
You know, there's even a spiritualist camp not too far from where you both are, if I remember right, Camp Wanawak in Wanawak, Wisconsin. I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
No, Lilydale, New York.
I would love to talk to people from those organizations and figure out how I can get hands on all their cool stuff and preserve it on a hard drive and in three other locations, like, indefinitely.
Mm-hmm. So,
and
I'd love to
get their stories. Okay, yeah.
So, for those listening and those participating in the chat, if they want to share their stories with you, is there a vehicle in place for this already, or is this something that they will be able to do in the near future?
Right now, what you can do is get in contact with me through Facebook and through our website, and to tell me if you're wanting to do individuals, if you're wanting to do groups, if you're wanting us to do oral histories, or if you want us to tell you how to do it. Eventually, we will have some of that information on our website, but thus far, the website is based on what I can put together, and it will become much improved when I get help. But, like, seriously, anybody can reach out to me, and I can help figure out how to make things happen. But I don't even know who is out there in the wider community, and that's what I'm hoping to find out.
And if people have donatable skills, especially tech skills, because that is something we are not strong at, you reach out to us, too, if you know how to do things like the social medias and you know how to do things like really cool web maintenance and
well,
sort of
and
thing. That's where
some
we,
of
Noelle
the
and I look at each other and go, duh.
Yeah, some of the benefit of having gotten our 501c3 right away is I can write receipts for donation in kind. You know, a little
there
enticement
go.
There.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are the things where Velvet and I look at each other and go, we need some help with this. But
yeah, who do you know? Because I don't know anybody.
I'm working on it.
So, really, though, to the people that are the folks that are out there listening, the folks that are here in the chat with us, you know, you can be an integral role in helping to further this mission along. You know, drop connections, drop ideas of, you know, regional areas. And I mean, I know just briefly looking at the chat, that there are repositories close by most of you. You know, there's so many opportunities out there to really support and bring this project and this organization to its fullest potential. And, you know, share this show, share, you know, the links with your friends, share in groups on Facebook or Instagram or, you know, wherever the interwebs will take you. Spread the word, because this is,
uh-oh, they found my personal
our
page.
Heritage.
Nagashiva has magic. He finds the socials.
Nagashiva is our backbone. He is our support. We absolutely adore and love Nagashiva for everything that he does for Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, and the Lucky Mojo Hero Rulework Hour, all of the LMC Radio Network shows. And hint, hint, another great resource for potential, you know, collaboration. Not to put anything more on
Sally.
The plate, Nagashiva.
I'm listening.
Welly, welly, well. Yeah. Well,
you know, and we can't forget, though, too, YIPI, the Ironwood Institution for the Preservation and Popularization of Indigenous Ethnomagicology.
That's an archive project spearheaded by Nagashiva and Miss Cat that Velvet, I've been meaning to get your attention turned to, so we'll have you take a look at that, too.
I remember things better when they're sent to me in a readable form, just
yep.
saying.
There it is in the chat.
Oh, I see that. Okay, I'll open that one.
Yep, beat me to it. So we have just a few minutes left. What closing points would you all like to make? And Hey Maganda is already sharing camp out too.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Put the word out, like you said. And even if you think, well, gosh, I'm in this little community or I'm in this state, there can't be anything. There are stories in your community. Take a look at your state historical society, wherever you are. See what kind of grants they give for research like this, for oral histories and that sort of thing. Reach out to us. There are stories in your community, and there is fascinating history in your community that just needed the right organization to come find it. And, you know, we're up and running now.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to having people pop up from places I've never heard of, doing things that I know absolutely nothing about, and I am more than happy to use my whatever skills I've developed, whatever experience I have, to like preserve all of this and to, you know, show not only within our pagan community, but just everyone else out there, like we're this real thing. You know, we're here. We've been here, even if you didn't know it. And, you know, you don't have to be from a big community for it to be cool. I bet some of the best stories are coming from little rural places where the Muggles aren't paying attention to what they're doing.
Exactly.
Like for myself, being from Pennsylvania, you know, through the Pennsylvania Dutch community down through Lancaster County and everything, oh, my goodness, the possibilities.
Hello?
Oh, still here.
I'm getting a link for the chat. I don't know what you guys are doing.
Oh, okay. I just got really quiet there for a moment. There we go. There's the link for you, Shiva. A moment of reverent silence.
But I think is about all the time we have for tonight. We did it again. Ran out of time.
Thanks so much for having us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You know, it's my pleasure, and we hope you'll join us again. And for everybody out there, we hope you've enjoyed your time with us this evening. Until next time we meet, keep that magic alive. Take us out, Reverend James.
Thank you, Reverend Art, and thank you, Velvet Capone and Doc Murphy of the Cultural Archive of Modern Paganism in Paganistan, for joining us this week. Don't forget, you can also find Doc Murphy at rootdocmurphy.com. We invite you to join us next week when we will be welcoming back to the studio the energizing Ayajani Matthew Vaughn with a discussion on the celebration of Lupercalia, an ancient Roman pagan festival. We've come to this end of this episode of Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, on the LMC Radio Network. You can find Reverend Art at FolkConjure.com and at FolkConjure on Facebook and Instagram, on the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com, on readersandrootworkers.com, and on Hoodoo Psychics. I'm your announcer, Reverend James, joining you from FolkConjure.com in North Carolina. Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and the shows are available in archive via mysticsmages.com/radio show and on the Lucky Mojo Forum. For all of us at Mystics and Mages, I'd like to thank you for being here. Be sure to follow at Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places on Facebook and at Mystics, Magical Places on Instagram for updates and news. We'll be back next week at the same time. Come sit a spell. Wink, wink. Relax and enjoy the show. We've only just begun. Thanks, everybody. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight. Thank you, Velvet. Thank you, Doc Murphy. Always a pleasure to have you on the show. You know, really enjoyed getting to know the camp team. for everybody out there, if you have any ideas for future shows, we're taking suggestions. Shoot us a message at Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places. Till next week, blessings.